when you've been told for the last 30 odd years that you're good for nothing, it takes a lot of work to make you realize that you're actually capable of anything.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of Secrets in the City, where we turn secrets of our past into life-changing lessons. Now, folks, you are in for an absolute treat. My next podcast guest is going to give you goosebumps throughout the episode. However, on that note, before we dive into today's episode, it's really important for you guys to understand that we're going to be talking about some pretty emotionally heavy stuff today to do with domestic violence. So if this episode brings up anything for you at all, please reach out and speak to someone. If you're in Australia, Lifeline can be contacted on 13 11 14. Now, on to today's episode. I gotta tell you, the first time I met my next guest was actually on a dance floor at a fundraising event. I was, as always, leaving nothing to chance and busting out the robot while wearing a dress made up of thousands of feathers. And here's what happened. She delicately came up to me and lightly tapped me on my shoulder and in the softest voice I've ever heard, which you're about to hear, introduced herself. It was in that moment that I was sure that some people on earth are simply born with positive, radiant energy, which kind of explains why the work that my guest does is groundbreaking and is truly changing the lives of Australian women. Okay, you're like, who is she? My next guest is Bronwyn Bate, the CEO and co-founder of Mettle Women. Now that's M-E-T-T-L-E, because I know you're going to want to look it up. So Mettle is an Australian gift box delivery service which employs women who are experiencing homelessness due to domestic and family violence. But they go one step further. They equip survivors with the skills, confidence, and financial security required to secure and maintain employment and stable housing. Today, we'll start off by exploring one of the hundreds of anonymous secrets that I've collected over the years. Then we unpack Bronwyn's own secret, which is, I didn't realize that keeping secrets was negatively impacting the ones I love the most. Can you relate? Okay, folks, I'm not going to give away anything else. You'll have to keep on listening to find out more. So let's dive in.
So you've selected a secret?
I have, yes.
And what is it? You can read it out.
Yeah. So it was, honestly, it was hard to choose because I was just in awe of the bravery. Hello. Of the bravery of all of the people who had submitted their secrets.
Yeah.
But this one jumped out because of the work that I do in the domestic violence space. Mm-hmm. The secret is, I hate that I stayed in an abusive relationship because I couldn't work out how to get out with my kids. And it was a relief when he died. So it's quite a heavy one.
It's a heavy one, absolutely. And why did that one jump out at you? Like, obviously it's connected to your work, but from a heartfelt connection, why did that jump out at you?
When I read it, this was my perception, but I perceived a bit of guilt and a bit of shame in that submission of a secret. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, I obviously, it's an anonymous secret. I have no idea who it is, but I just felt that I needed to say to whoever this brave person is, you should not feel like this needs to be a secret, and that it is completely understandable that you felt a moment of respite and relief once all of this chaos was over. And yeah, I think there are so many people in a similar situation where, you know, the chaos, the trauma, the torture doesn't end when you decide to leave. And obviously the choice to leave for this, whoever submitted this secret, was a really tough choice. And I'm not even sure what the circumstances were, but I just felt, you know, that there was a looming shame about the fact that maybe they couldn't. And that's okay. Sometimes you can't, and sometimes it's not safe enough to. And when there's kids involved, it's so complex. So I guess I chose it because I just wanted to reassure whoever this brave person is that it's okay. And there's no right way to navigate those situations because there are so many complexities. So you're not alone. That's all.
Absolutely. It sounds to me a lot, I mean, you would know more, way more obviously on this topic with domestic violence. It's almost like you're traumatized twice. Mm-hmm. So even if you get out of the situation, you're not only traumatized while you're in it, whether that's physical abuse, emotional abuse, mm-hmm. psychological abuse, but then even if you leave, there's that lagging trauma. Yeah. And I think it's that underscore of guilt. Did I do the right thing by leaving? For your kids, but it's complicated.
It's so complicated. I don't know if you recall, we had our first birthday for the organization that I run. Mm-hmm. And one of the activities when guests entered was to present them with a situation that one of the women in our program had faced. And, you know, you kind of chose the path that you would go down. Mm-hmm. And had to make a really split decision on, would you choose to stay and endure the abuse that was only being kind of taken out on you as the mother, mm-hmm. or would you plan an escape, which could potentially threaten the lives of your kids and your elderly parents? That was the threat that this woman was facing.
Yeah.
And no one knew what the right choice was, because there's no such thing as a right choice in those situations. But once she had an escape plan and once she left, that was just the beginning. You know, there's custody battles, there's court, there's so many things. It could be something like a scent or a sound that triggers you to recall a moment of abuse, and it's just an ongoing thing. So to the brave person that submitted that secret to you, it's okay that you felt that it was a relief when it was all over.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's really the purpose of these secrets is even if you've never experienced domestic or physical abuse, mm-hmm. And your secret has to do with something on along the lines of binge eating or so forth, the connection is that guilt and shame. And I truly believe that once we start talking about that guilt and shame that we all feel, I mean, if you don't feel it, then I don't know what color the sky is in your world. Everyone feels it. And it's that connection that can cross genders, ethnicities, boundaries. I think it's so powerful. So now the work that you do, would you say guilt and shame is a common factor within the women that you help? And obviously men are affected as well, but you probably predominantly work with women. Can you talk to us a bit about some of the, obviously not talking about their exact stories, but their experiences of guilt and shame?
Absolutely. Each of them, you hit the nail on the head there. They all have such diverse circumstances that have led them to our employment program, but each of them share a guilt that's mostly attached to their children. And so all 13 of the women in our program at the moment, bar one, have children. And I think the main thing is, did I get out soon enough? Did I expose them to too much? And what we have to try and, not myself, I'm not a mental health practitioner, but we liaise with psychologists and counselors mm-hmm. to work with them. They constantly try and reiterate, it wasn't on you to have to fix this situation. It was unfair. You were the person that was in an unfair situation. You did the best you could at the time. You know, it's not as simple as just grabbing the kids' things and leaving.
Yep.
Sometimes it's a matter of life and death. Mm. And it takes a third party sometimes to really drive that home for them to realize, okay, it wasn't a choice. It was something that, I don't know, I had to really seize that ideal moment. Mm. And for some people, that ideal moment doesn't come. And that's why we hear of so many deaths around Australia and around the world. Mm. And one thing that I know you put a trigger warning at the beginning of this, but I just want to kind of reiterate, this is kind of really emotional content, but you know, this woman who submitted the secret has said that she felt relief when her perpetrator passed.
Yep.
So often the women share with me that if the kids weren't in the picture, it would be them that wanted to end their life because it's just too hard. Yeah. And so there's a guilt attached to, I have to be here for the children to make sure that this next phase of their life is okay, mm-hmm. and that they're protected from what the mother had to endure. But very often it's not that they'd ever wish harm on the perpetrator. It's not that they'd ever wish harm on anyone, but it all just gets too much. And if it wasn't for the kids needing someone to guide them through, several of them have expressed before, that would be my out. And so I think the guilt of what they've exposed their kids to, even though it wasn't them, again, they blame themselves, but it's not them that were the perpetrators of these horrible situations. But yeah, they carry that guilt through as a mum. And then the one that doesn't have a kid as well, it's a shame that she's expressed to us. It's shame that she didn't feel strong enough to take a stand and leave. But again, there are so many complex barriers in the way. I think there's a public scrutiny as well because of a lack of understanding, in that people are so quick to say, why didn't she leave? Why didn't he leave? Why would you put up with that kind of behavior?
Yeah.
It's just not that simple. And
it isn't.
Yeah. There are so many cultural barriers, financial barriers. When you've been degraded for so many years and told that you're worthless, it could just be verbal abuse saying that, if you went out in the world on your own, you wouldn't last. And you start to believe that. And again, it doesn't just have to be domestic violence. It could be any mental health battles that you're facing. You start to believe it when people downplay your strengths in such a big way for so many years.
Absolutely. You can even, we do it to ourselves. Yeah. You know, even when we look in the mirror, and just even when we were talking about before, like when I look at you, I'm like, oh my God, you should be on a runway. And you're like, oh, I don't want to talk about my profile. But, you know, even something as benign as body image, we talk ourselves down all the time. And that's such an insidious, small, benign thing. So you could imagine the exponential effect that when someone else that is meant to be caring of you says degrading things. It's almost like, well, I have to believe it. It must be true. And would you say also, you know, I did the best I could, when you said that, that really resonated with me, because would you say that women, especially when they hear you did the best you could, it's kind of like, well, did I? Couldn't I have done more? Should I have done this? Yeah. If, should, but, could. And those are the things, the what ifs. And would you say that almost sometimes we get stuck in the past by thinking, but I wonder what would happen if we would have done that? Is that kind of on repeat with the ladies that you work with?
Yeah, all the time, all the time. And I think I'm really privileged in that I get to work alongside them as they start to discover their self-worth and as they start to unlock the potential that they have to embark on all of these really exciting things that they've never thought about before. I have so much admiration for the women on the front line who work with them in the crisis centers and, you know, perform the evacuations with the police, who see them when they're at their lowest. But they have the hardest job in the world, but they still come to work every day with a smile on their face to support these women. But the joy in my job is getting to see someone who might come in and apologize for standing in the wrong position, or, you know, if they spoke quietly and I said, oh, I'm sorry, what was that? And ask them to repeat themselves, really small things, that shatters them. And you have to be so gentle with these fragile in that moment and in that context, but then seeing them understand, I'm not actually fragile, I'm capable of really awesome things, is such a privilege. But that internal dialogue of I could have done more, you're right, it's so prevalent. I'm paraphrasing this quote a little bit, but one of the women, our first graduate actually, she said when she graduated, on a card to my sister and I, when you've been told for the last 30 odd years that you're good for nothing, it takes a lot of work to make you realize that you're actually capable of anything. And I hope I've got that quote right. I'm paraphrasing it, but it was really beautiful, with the 9 months that she was working with us, to all of a sudden say, oh my gosh, what he was telling me was a lie.
Yes.
I'm actually awesome. And realizing that she was an incredible mother. You know, she had a 16-year-old son that was in the refuge with her for those 9 months. Mm-hmm. And she felt so guilty that he was a teenage boy not getting to live out the life that a teenage boy should. I guess, mm-hmm. In what her view of what his life should have been. Mm-hmm. But he didn't judge her. He thought she was an amazing mother. And mm-hmm. I think when she started to see, okay, I haven't let him down, the fact that I took us away from that situation, regardless of how long we were in it for, that time was the only time that it could happen, and now mm-hmm. we can start our life fresh. So seeing them understand that, okay, maybe I did act as soon as I could have. Mm. It's a really cool thing to watch.
It's like a renaissance. Yeah. It's kind of like a rebirth. And it's interesting because what you're saying is sort of very similar to what I love doing with my clients and students and so forth. And it's interesting from a physiological perspective, you know, over 30 years, your brain is wired for protection. Wired to only think that you are the lowest of the low. And it's kind of like, you know, if you were always to walk, you know, as in a certain way, or a golf swing, I always say, you know, if you've been taught to do a golf swing in a certain way, but it's wrong, after 30 years, someone says, oh no, try it this way, you're going to default to old patterns. It takes time to rewire what you think about yourself, especially when it's connected to something so emotional. So it's kind of like a before and after that you get to see.
I know.
And it's life changing.
Yeah, it's magnificent. And so often, you know, obviously the safety of these women is paramount and we can't share pictures of them. But the physical, I know it's such an internal transformation, but the physical transformation as well, the way that they hold themselves. Yeah. And, you know, it's not like, they got their hair done or, a glam makeover. But there is something about their presence and the way that they hold themselves at the end of that 6 months and then into the future that it's so beautiful to watch. So you're completely right. Once they start learning, oh, there's more than one way to think about who I am in this world, mm-hmm. The world's their oyster.
Do you think some of it is to think positively about ourselves, especially here in Australia with the tall poppy syndrome? Do you think some of it is, I don't know whether I should like myself because it might come across as conceited. Do you think there's anything inherent to that? Because think about it, like imagine like a supermodel, if she were to walk down the street and say, you know, with her head held high and said, you know, no, I actually really, really like myself. I think I'm beautiful. I think I'm smart. I think I'm a good person. Would we look at her and say, really? You think you're what?
Yeah.
Or would we say, you go, girl? Yet someone who is perhaps a bit overweight, you know, not the stereotypical image of beauty, if they were to walk down the street and say the same thing, we'd be like, yo, you go, girl. Yeah, so is it the same sort of thing with these ladies, that they almost feel like a bit conceited if they start to like themselves?
Absolutely. I think it's a mixture of definitely a mixture of that.
Social norms.
Exactly. Yeah. And then the fact that they're so isolated from anyone.
Oh, no. Sorry, I just scratched my nose for the people listening. And I think you thought I was signaling. You have a booger in your nose.
Thanks for the heads up. I think they're so deliberately isolated by their perpetrator that is the only information they're receiving. Mm. So there's no one to say what you're saying. There's no one to say, ignore that. You're fabulous. All they hear is you're worthless.
Yep.
And so, you know, I'm sure that if we had a little bit of negative input in our life, it would impact us. But then if it was counteracted by a lot of positive reinforcement, we might let that prevail when you're only hearing you're worthless. And it's not just about self-worth. It's really manipulative stuff like you're too dumb to control the money. I'm not going to let you have a bank card because you're not smart enough to control our finances.
Yeah.
So it's belief that I'm too dumb to ever apply for a job. I'm too dumb to ever look at a computer. A lot of these women are in their, you know, early 50s and they've never touched a computer because they've been so deliberately isolated from anything that would allow them to grow and develop as a person. And it's deliberate. It's calculated from the perpetrator's side, but they're not aware of that at the time, at no fault of their own. So when they finally have positive reinforcement from the person that should be saying, you look fab, like, don't downgrade yourself, you're amazing. It was so funny, actually, when you were talking about that, I remember having to really check myself when I was a bit younger on account of my younger sister, who is just the most wise, brilliant young woman. She's wise beyond her years. And I took her to her first music festival, thinking I was cool, showing her the ropes. And when we were there, this is when like festival attire became kind of that Burning Man-esque. Yeah. Everyone was just kind of wearing lingerie and I'm such a prude and I'm sitting there covered up and a few young girls walked past in what looked like lingerie. They looked amazing, but I said a comment like, wow, they're confident. And I said it in kind of a sarcastic tone.
Yep.
And my little sister, I'm so proud of her for picking me up, but she was just like, Bron, the only reason that you're saying that is because you wouldn't feel comfortable wearing that. If they feel comfortable, celebrate them. I was just like, oh, okay, thanks. Wow, I think she was like 17 at the time. And I was just like, okay, wow, I'm never going to see someone again and, you know, degrade them for feeling fabulous in something that I wouldn't feel comfortable in. And I think that's so often where judgment comes from, is that I judge you because I'd feel uncomfortable if I was wearing the same thing or if I was holding myself in that same confident way. Yeah. So thanks, Eb, for picking me up.
But absolutely. Yeah. What's the saying? We rise by lifting other people up, that kind of thing. 100%. It's funny once you realize that you can create this positive ripple effect by helping others feel good. It's almost addicting.
Yeah.
Addicting in a way. So tell me a bit about why you got into this in the first place, and perhaps maybe share your own secret if it relates to this secret.
My secret doesn't really relate to the domestic violence secret that I chose. I wanted to choose that one just because I think you have such an incredible platform of women who are probably feeling the same guilt that this woman also felt. Mm. It's the guilt that every one of the women that I work with also feels. And I just wanted to stamp out that guilt and say, you shouldn't feel guilty. It's okay to be exhausted by what you're going through.
Love it. Yep.
My secret is one that was also prompted by another one of your brave submissions. It is that the submission that kind of prompted me to start thinking about this was that I often hold my tears back and don't want to cry because I feel that it would make me look weak and that I wouldn't be a good role model if people saw that kind of vulnerability. So that was the secret that one of your beautiful community submitted. Mine, I guess, is that I didn't realize that keeping secrets that weren't really that huge were negatively impacting the people that I loved the most. And what I mean by that is that I've always been an incredibly, incredibly private person, and I'm fine with that. That's who I am. And I've always had maybe one kind of confidant in my partner that he knows my deepest, darkest secrets. And I didn't think that it ever really needed to go beyond that point. I was never bottling things up since being with my partner. They weren't kind of festering inside. Mm-hmm. So I thought that that's where they needed, I'd share them with him and that's where it would end. And when I was actually developing the framework for Metal, I went to see a psychologist for the first time in my life. And it wasn't for me. I went there to pay for a session so that I could ask a bunch of questions about how I should operate my business. I know.
Such a businesswoman.
Yeah. I just thought, you know, this is an area that falls outside of my remit. And although we're going to be partnering with psychologists, I wanted to make sure that I wasn't creating an environment that was triggering to any of the women that we worked with. And I just had a list of questions of what I should avoid, what I should be doing to create the most safe space. And the psych had the same kind of response as you. They were like, this isn't what this session is for. Like, you come here to talk about your stuff.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, I don't need to talk about my stuff. I'm good. And they were like, okay, have you ever been to a psychologist before or spoken about your life stuff? It's like, no, I don't need to, but can you answer these questions? And she was like, I promise you I will, but I want to just dive into why you are here first. It seems to me like you want to have everything together for everyone else, but what's going on with you? And I resisted for a really long time. By the end of the session, I was bawling and I just had unlocked all of this stuff that I didn't realize that I needed to talk about.
Yes.
I hadn't spoken to my partner about a lot of it. I thought I just didn't realize that I had all of this stuff. And sorry to disappoint, like, I'm not going to share it publicly, the stuff. But I guess my lesson out of that, she was so fantastic. And at the end, throughout the session, I'd mentioned the fact that I was the eldest sister of three beautiful, incredible young women.
Yeah.
And she said, do your sisters open up to you about their deepest, darker secrets? And I said, oh, you know, they're all pretty brave. They do when there's something really dire going on, but, you know, they're all pretty tough. And she said, oh, that's interesting because you're pretty tough as well. And it seems after this session that you've got a lot of stuff that you've been hiding. Do you think that potentially the fact that you've been a big, brave sister who has never shared anything that's gone on in your life or in your mind, do you think that that is maybe stopping them from knowing that you're there to talk to them and when they need to work through stuff?
Yeah.
And it just hit home. I thought, wow, because I've been putting up this image of I've got my shit together. I don't need anyone's help. And, you know, this big brave image, because I never wanted to burden my sisters or anyone in my life. As a result, they thought that they had to be tough in their worlds as well. And so I went to each of them respectively and just said, you know, once I'd kind of worked through the stuff that we unlocked with the psychologist, and I went back to her a few times for myself, and it was so healthy and such a beautiful experience. But I went to each of them individually and just said, I'm all good now, but I just want you to know that there have been times when I haven't been. And I haven't shared that with you because I didn't want to burden you. And as your big sister, I thought it was my job to protect you from that dark stuff.
Yeah.
But if you're ever in a place where you want to unpack this stuff, I've been where you've been before and I want to help you be able to help you navigate your way out of these darker times. And it opened up our relationship to a whole new level. We were always really, really close, but we just never talked about the real stuff.
Yeah.
And I think giving them, unlocking the secret, I guess, that I did struggle with some stuff, gave them permission to open up as well, and has just transformed our relationship to the most beautiful place.
That's transformed. That was the word I was just about to say. It takes relationships to a completely new level. It's kind of like getting naked in front of someone. It's like, you've seen everything now. Yeah. So what can't we deal with now? If you know this about me and I know that about you. And I think Brené Brown described trust really, really well. It's kind of like laying bricks. Is, you know, you have to put a brick on, then I put a brick on, then you put a brick on. And that's how trust relationships are formed, by exposing and divulging a tiny bit about ourselves.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it worked with friendships as well. Mm-hmm. I have always been surrounded by beautiful friends, but I have always had such a wall up. I don't think my friends, you know, who I've had for years and years, you know, decades, had no idea stuff that was going on with family or anything, and not because I didn't trust them enough to share with them, but because I just never wanted to burden anyone. And then once I shared little bits and pieces, they started sharing their struggles with me, and it just it wasn't until, you know, my late 20s where I really developed those deep friendships where your friends become family because they know more about you and they know when to look out for signals of you maybe not being okay. Yeah. They know when a smile is maybe a bit of a mask. So
yeah,
it was a really healthy experience.
Absolutely. So you mentioned burden. I didn't want to burden my family. I didn't want to burden my friends with this. Do you think there's anything else in regards to not divulging or not sharing with others? Do you think there's anything else that prevents us from?
Yeah. It's funny because I was trying to analyze when I was reading through all of the secrets that your community had submitted to you anonymously. When I was reading through them, I was thinking that response where you're saying that woman walks down the street and they're maybe a little bit shy and we're like, you have no reason to be shy.
Yeah.
The shame that maybe other people carry from a third party, from someone on the outside, they're like, what are you talking about? There's no shame attached to that, but it's such an internal battle. And I think potentially there was a bit of shame about the things that I was keeping inside. But predominantly I think it was just the fact that I didn't think that my loved ones had the emotional capacity to take on what felt so heavy to me. But they had the capacity. Like I would never, I think if you turn it around and if they were to come to me with the same stuff that I was kind of working through, of course I had the capacity. You make the room for the people you love and you figure it out together. And I think, you know, many hands make light work. And if you're working through stuff together, of course you both have the capacity. So I think it was I'd created a concept in my head that this is bigger than anyone has the capacity to deal with. And in reality, it wasn't. So I think removing these things that we create in our head maybe as a defense mechanism so that you don't have to share. But yeah, in revealing a couple of things that I was going through to friends and to sisters, it's allowed them to open up and say, yeah, I was there once as well and I still kind of battle with these things. And now we know to check in on each other. And it's not that it consumes our conversations and it's not that that's all we talk about, but it's so that we can flag, how's that going? You know, do we need to check in so that it doesn't become something that you just push down again?
Yeah. With my partner who previously was very much a fix it. If I told him something, I need to fix it. Yeah. So now it's interesting what you're saying. He can hold the conversation and he knows that you say, okay, I'm glad that you told me.
Yes.
And to sort of preface, I need to tell you something, but I just need to get it off my chest. Yeah. And as I always say, the best listeners are the ones that keep their mouth shut. You know, you don't need to fix it. And I think we're in this society that problems need to be immediately fixed. It's kind of like weight loss. Oh, you've gained weight over 30 years. You need to lose it in 8 weeks. Yeah. And I'll always remember one of the ladies that I worked with after a substantial amount of time, she's always wanted to lose weight. And then it sort of clicked with her. And she said, I finally lost the weight of guilt and shame. And this is it. You know, if I put on one hand, you can lose all the weight that you want. On the other hand, you can lose all the shame and guilt, but you can't have both. Which one would you choose? People at the start always say, once I lose the weight, then I won't feel guilt and shame. I'm like, no, it doesn't work that way. When you finally realize it's really guilt and shame that's holding you back, it's kind of that rubber band that snaps you back into, you know, the past, that's when I think you really get free.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's really our own thoughts that keep us, are holding us back.
Yeah,
absolutely. Would you say also kind of connecting what you were saying at the start, and now you're sort of like the sum of the people around you. Mm-hmm. And because I mean, the ladies that you work with, once they get out of that, you know, if you're in a situation, perhaps for the listeners who don't have people around them to share, like, what do they do then if they, you know, have the friends that are sort of giving the, you know, the strong face and so forth, and they don't feel like they can share? What do they do?
Yeah, well, it's a really, it's such a great question, because I remember coming to you when we first connected.
Yeah.
We had a cuppa, and I remember saying, I'm like your partner in that I'm so solutions driven.
Yeah.
And I really struggled to not have the answer. These women would divulge some really, really traumatic information, and I felt really helpless because I didn't have a fix. Mm. And you said the exact same thing to me, in that the best listeners can just keep their mouths shut, and you don't have to have a solution for them. Mm. And it's something that I really had to practice. You know, I think someone even said to me, like, literally just sit on your hands, and when they've, because I just want to say, all right, here's what you've unloaded. What's the steps that we're going to take to fix this? There are women, and the only space that they have to unleash what's happening is at Metal, in our workplace. Mm. And it's really unfortunate, because they're in the shelter where other women are going through the same circumstances as they are. And the shelters that we work with have a really, really beautiful offering, in that they have peer support groups where you can just go and chat.
Yeah.
But it's so incredible how selfless all of these women are. Yeah. Because they're in a share house with, say, 10 other families at a time, they'll be in these sharing and connection groups. Mm. But they've expressed to us that they're really conscious of talking about what they're feeling, because they're sitting with 9 other women mm-hmm. who are going through equally as devastating situations. Mm. So they wait until they come to Metal, where there's no I don't want to use the word competing, but for lack of a better word, they're not. They don't feel like they're underplaying someone else's experiences. Yeah. So they come to Metal, and we have a check-in in the morning before they start work, where we just say, it's time to unload anything you need to get off your chest, but it can't stop here, because Alicia and I aren't mental health practitioners. We're just employers, but we're colleagues who want to be a shoulder to cry on.
Yep.
So we unleash it all, we unpack it, and then after they've had a chance to unpack it, we say, all right, we've got 2 options. What would you like to do with this?
Yeah.
Are you happy that it's off your chest? Yeah. And is that where you wanted that to end? Or do we want to schedule in an appointment with your psych? Or do we want to schedule in an appointment with yoga? Do we want to schedule in I don't know, that we've got this beautiful partnership with a multicultural women's association, and they do salsa dancing, and they do all of these fun things that just distract you from the madness that is going on in your life. And so we kind of present them with a few options to say, now that it's off your chest, what do you feel compelled to do to take that next step into feeling a bit better? Because very often there is no one else that they can talk to, and they don't think that talking about it further is productive. They're saying, you know, this is the situation. It absolutely sucks. But for now, there's nothing that I can do to make it suck less.
Yep. 100%.
Yeah.
Discomfort.
Yeah.
I think we're so, so, I guess, against sitting in discomfort.
Yeah.
You know, when we have a headache, we take a pill. When we're feeling a bit like our pants are too tight, we go on a diet. You know, if we can't solve a problem at work, we pay someone to fix it. You know, it's I find for 37 years, I just didn't want to sit in discomfort. And then it finally clicked that when you sit in that discomfort, there's so much information, so much you can learn about yourself. And people, you know, when they say, oh, I would love to be confident like you, I'm like, okay, great. Go out and fail at something. Go out and completely screw up something. And then that's the way to confidence. And they're like, what?
Yeah.
No. I need to do everything perfect to get to be confident. I'm like, no, that's not the way it works. it's sitting in discomfort. And that's why, you know, this podcast is, I'm getting people to sit in their discomfort, because that's where the life lessons are. And I almost look at your women like superwomen, because they've not only had to sit in discomfort for 20, 30, 40 plus years, but they're constantly having to learn from discomfort even after they leave the perpetrator. And to me, they're the wisest people on earth.
Amen.
They really are. They really are.
I learn so much from them every day. I, you know, my sister and I went about founding this organization to try and help them leap into that next phase of their life with confidence and understanding their self-worth, yeah, and equipping them with some tools along the way for the workplace. But the transformation that they've brought to our lives is just immeasurable because of things like that. You know, they would be completely forgiven if they just decided one day, no, too hard, this has been the roughest experience of my life, I'm going to stay in bed today and not show up to work. That would be fine, but they don't. And they don't. Somehow, regardless of the discomfort and regardless of the fact that they know that progress isn't going to occur for quite some time, they know that they're stuck in a month-long court battle in both the criminal court and the family court. They know that permanent housing isn't an option for them for at least 6 months while we help them save for a bond. There are so many uncomfortable facts in their life. And rather than dwelling in that and saying, yeah, this is really unfair, which they would be completely entitled to saying, they come to work, they smile, they inspire us, and I don't know how they do it, quite frankly. They're just magnificent. And like you say, they're superwomen. The woman that I was saying before said, with that quote about the 30 years, we've got all around the office now little frames with little sayings that she would go around the office just imparting her joy and wisdom on people. She had the most horrific, like the stuff of horror movies was her life. And yet she would come to work, and if I was getting frustrated at, you know, a printer not working or something, she'd be like, Bron, that's just the universe telling you to take some time out and go and make yourself a cup of tea. Like, what? How are you, you know, just little lessons like that. Someone who has so much discomfort in their life and so many unfair circumstances piled up, but they know how to be okay with that and know that there will be a light at the end of the tunnel. But, you know, it's just baby steps getting there and allowing yourself and all of the circumstances that need to line up to get there.
Absolutely. It kind of reminds me of the saying, this too shall pass. Yeah. And for such a long time, I always thought that was only for the negative, but it's also positive too. So this too shall pass. This is shit now. It's going to be, you know, when you're in that yucky moment, you think, oh, this is going to be crap forever. Mm-hmm. Using the word yet, it's crap now, but it just hasn't changed yet. Yeah. And or also, you know, this is really, I'm feeling really good now, but you know what? Also, this could pass and I could get back into that yucky feeling. But I think having that growth mindset, which is essentially what you're talking about here, I'm in this court battle. I'm not going to have a house for 6, 12, maybe even a couple of years. I just don't have it yet. And I think that's the best way to get out of discomfort, would you say? Like when you're in that uncomfortable, you know, if you've had an argument with your boss or your best friend, you're uncomfortable now, but you just haven't found the solution yet.
Yeah.
Would you say is?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I love the word yet.
Oh, me too. I think you've just unlocked my love for it even more. I always spark up when I heard her say these things, but hearing you just zone in on yet. Absolutely. That's it. And I think that's the secret ingredient to her success as an individual. She graduated from Metal and went on to study full time to do counseling so that she could work with women who were in similar circumstances to her. And just the idea of her in 2 years' time, when she's finished imparting this wisdom that she already had without the education, imagine once it's refined and she, reminds people that, you're in the thick of it now, but you're not through it yet.
That's right.
Yeah, she's going to transform so many lives, despite the fact that she was dealt the most unfair hand imaginable. So
absolutely.
Yeah. If she can do it, we can all do it.
That's it. One of the first articles we were meant to read, well, we had to read for my counseling course, my postgrad counseling degree, was an article named Wounded Healer. And the synopsis of that article was essentially asking the question, if you're just about to start a psychology degree, counseling degree, and so forth, why are you actually doing it? And there was all these sort of arguments within the article, like, are psychologists the most screwed up ones on earth? You know, you always hear that they're the biggest nut jobs and so forth. But essentially, it asks the question, are the people that have gone through the discomfort the best ones to sit in the chair and hold someone else who is going through that discomfort? I think the answer is yes. I do, because even though I could definitely relate, I could sit with someone who has gone through that kind of trauma, at the end of the day, you still don't share that person's eyes. So I think that person, you know, the lady who you're speaking with, is truly going to transform lives.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it doesn't mean that through that shared experience that you have to relay that. There's just a way that it elevates her work to the next level. Mm-hmm. And we actually had a new program participant who's residing in a refuge where this graduate was doing her work placement.
Oh, wow.
And she said, I had this fabulous lady who was on her work placement, and she was so helpful. And when she shared who her name was, I realized, oh my gosh, that is this woman. And wow. Contacted the CEO, and I was like, was this so-and-so? You know, I won't share her name for safety.
Yeah, but of course.
She was like, yeah. I said, isn't that incredible that she didn't divulge her connection to the cause, the fact that she once resided in that refuge, the fact that she's been through the exact same circumstance. She was just there. And just the fact that she had that lived experience, she didn't have to vocalize that, but it made her a better practitioner, even in her work experience. So you're so right. I think it definitely is an asset.
I always say, yeah, I think there's still a stigma against going to see a counselor here in Australia. And I don't want to say, oh, Australia, you're so living in the dark ages. It's not about that. But I think there still is a bit of a stigma to go see someone and share and talk, whether it's counselor or psychologist and so forth. One thing that I always tell people, it's not about that you are screwed up and you're going to see someone who's not screwed up to help you be less screwed up. It's a person that essentially you walk beside to go to a destination that is perhaps better for you. But the person that you're talking to is not walking in front of you, behind you, beside you. They're just there to guide you. And as I always say, you can't fix a mindset with the same mindset that got you into that spot. You know, if you're in that moment of discomfort, the only thing that you want to do is get out of it. But sometimes you need to sit in it. One of the things that we learned within the counseling course that will always resonate with me is sometimes silence is the most beneficial to change. To sit where that person is, just, you can see the mind ticking over. And oftentimes we want to fix it. We want that God complex. Oh, yeah. let me fill in the space, this uncomfortable space. But it's kind of just sitting next to them, walking next to them in silence, that sometimes the best work is done.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I think as well, you're right. There is a stigma in Australia attached to seeking help. No one wants to appear weak. And I think as soon as people start normalizing their conversations like you are doing, it's so important that people understand, no, it doesn't mean that you're a lesser person or that you're so troubled that you can't be of value to anyone, that you're seeking help. It's actually really commendable that you're seeking help, because you're going to be a better person for everyone around you, not just yourself. So yeah, I think what you're doing is so amazing to try and remove that stigma.
Well, back at you, sister. I think that's a great way to wrap this up and say that thank you so much for putting your heart on the line and opening up about, you know, especially being such a private person. And I hope that this episode really has enabled other people, perhaps if they're in a precarious situation, no matter what that is, that they perhaps can, you know, put their hand up and say, you know what, maybe I need a helping hand. So we will definitely link everything to Metal. It has the most amazing gift boxes. Please, after you listen to this episode, go to their website, grab a box. You're more than welcome to buy me a box. I'm fine with that. I love the room spray. So thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Holy moly cannoli. What an episode. All right, guys, before I sign off, I'd like to thank you for taking the time to listen. There are thousands of podcasts out there. You've chosen to listen to mine. Hallelujah. So on that note, I have a quick favor to ask. If you could spare just a few seconds to subscribe and share it with a friend, well, gosh, golly, golly gee, that would just make my day and help us get this show to more amazing people just like you. Until next time, never forget that every day is your chance to shine. Bye-bye.